long last, our wait is finally over. The Daytona 500 is here, getting underway on Sunday. The order is set. The field is ready. NASCAR DFS contests are back in the lobby, and I am pumped to break down this event for you today and talk some NASCAR once again here on the Heat Check. This is the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire right here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Podcast Network. My name is Jim Sonnis. I am a senior writer and analyst here to break down the Daytona 500 from a NASCAR DFS perspective. We're recording this on Friday after the duels have already taken place, which means we do know who is starting where for this year's Daytona 500. So a bit different than usual. Usually for the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, we are going through strategies and discussing which drivers could potentially be in play for this week before qualifying to kind of get you thoughts on the process for filling out a lineup. But because qualifying is different for the 500, figured I'd wait until Friday, get the podcast up with qualifying set so I can actually tell you, hey, I like this guy for Sunday. So I'm not going to tell you like who you should play because I kind of think it's better just to tell you, hey, this is broadly what you want to do because you want to be different from what everyone else is doing. But I will mention some drivers I like for cash games and some I think could be really fun for tournaments as well. Normally, this podcast will go up on Wednesdays, but just for this week, putting it up on Friday here on the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. So next week, we'll have the podcast on Wednesday. PGA Podcast, as always, will be on Tuesday. To get all those podcasts, subscribe to the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed, Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Follow ratings, reviews, subscriptions, always appreciated as well on all of those platforms. So thank you to all of you who have already done so as we get set for yet another season of NASCAR. Lock for the Daytona 500 on FanDuel is set for 2:30 on Sunday. So you've got a lot of time to tinker. There will be practices between now and then, and there will likely be some drivers who have to go to backup cars because of practice wrecks or whatever it may be. So make sure you are checking things throughout the day on Sunday to see if we get news that anyone will be going to the back, stuff like that. Doesn't matter as much here as other places because we're not really focused on laps led, but it does matter a little bit. So keep an eye out on those things. Practice times can tell you which drivers are really lacking speed, and I think that that is important. So I wouldn't totally dismiss practice times, but I wouldn't fret about, oh, this guy's first in practice versus this guy's fifth. It's more so I want to identify drivers who don't have the speed to keep up with the pack, and I will then exclude them. But I think that on the top end, it's not going to matter too much because there is a lot of flukiness in practice speeds at a restricted play race. We're going to break down strategies for this event first, then we'll go tier by tier, letting you know which drivers stand out in each salary tier on FanDuel. But first, if you want to get in on the action for the Great American Race, head on over to FanDuel.com and check out their Intimidator contest. It is just a $5 entry fee, and for that, you get a shot at $100,000 in total prizes. First place nets $20,000 of that, and the top seven finishers all get at least $1,000. To get yourself entered, go to FanDuel.com, check out the NASCAR lobby, and get yourself entered for NASCAR DFS for the Daytona 500. All right, so let's do the strategy discussion here first for the Daytona 500. This is what we do on each podcast, letting you know how you want to construct your rosters. And if you've played DFS on a restricted play track before, you kind of know the deal here. You want to stack the back. And what I mean by stack the back is get drivers starting further back in the pack who can rack up place differential points. And the reason for that is on FanDuel, we've only got really two sources of upside from a FanDuel point perspective. One of them is laps led. The other one is place differential. And at Daytona, there aren't a lot of points available for laps led. Only 200 laps total in the Daytona 500, which means there are 20 points available for laps led on FanDuel. That's not a lot. It's one of the smaller numbers we will have for the year to begin with, and that gets further broken down because a lot of drivers are going to wind up leading laps here. It's not often that you will see one driver monopolize all the laps led in a given race. Over the past six races at Daytona, so since they trimmed the field down to 40 drivers, this does include two July races where there are only 160 laps, but still, eight drivers have led more than 25 laps. That is 2.5 points, not a big bump. Only three drivers have led more than 51 laps. That's where you get to the impactful range, is once they lead more than 51 laps, then you're talking needle-moving upside via laps led. So only three times in the past six races. Now, if you've watched racing during speed weeks thus far, you're going to say, hey, Paul Menard led 51 laps in the Advanced Auto Parts Clash. We saw Clint Bowyer leading the pack around last night. Kevin Harvick did the same last night. So maybe based on that, it could lead you to prioritizing guys starting closer to the front who can be the Pied Pipers for the field on Sunday. And to an extent, that's true. And we'll talk about how to handle that in a second, but it doesn't mean you must target drivers at the front. The reason for that is that Daytona is a very high variance track. Not every driver who leads those laps is going to finish well. If we go back to that list of eight drivers who have led at least 25 laps at Daytona, only three of those eight drivers finished in the top 10. Only two of those drivers were in the top five. Last year, it was Ryan Blaney. Led 118 laps, or 115, and finished seventh. He was the third highest scorer in that race, even though he led a ton of laps. So, you know, looking back to the Clash, Paul Menard led all those laps, finished poorly. So it doesn't mean you should ignore lap sled completely, and we'll talk about more why in a second. But even if driver A does lead a lot of laps, it's not a guarantee to be a major positive for the top scorers. So you should put emphasis on lap sled, at least some, but you don't need to go all out for it. And it's going to be basically at one position where you go really all out for lap sled. So with that in mind, how should we build our rosters? I think that you can look back to the past three Daytona 500s to see what has played out there, because again, that's the same number of laps, same format for qualifying. The highest scoring average, based on average FanDuel points over the past three Daytona 500, has come from drivers starting between 36th and 40th. That is the lowest you can start in this field. That range has the highest scoring average. And the reason why is pretty obvious, because at Daytona, there are a lot of crashes, which means if you start 12th, you have a lot more potential for negative place differential points than you do if you start 32nd. So this makes sense anecdotally, and we don't need to target drivers starting the bottom five. I think there's at least one this week, this year, who is super viable, but you don't need to. It's more so to show that the lower you start in the field, the higher your floor will be for this race. So we do want to prioritize drivers starting towards the back because their floors are so high and their ceilings are also probably higher than everybody else as well. But we do need to target occasionally some drivers starting up front. If we look at back at the past six races, for Daytona, including the July race, I want to look at the five highest scoring drivers in each of those six races to see where they started. This is what an optimal lineup would look like if there were no salary cap. And at Daytona, there kind of isn't a salary cap because it's so spread out and so many low salary drivers can finish really well. If we look at those six optimal rosters, only two contained multiple drivers who started in the top 10. Three of those optimal rosters included one driver who started in the top 10, and this year's past July race in Daytona was one where there were no drivers in the top 10 who were among the top five in scoring. So what this tells me, at least, is that more often than not, we're going to want one driver starting towards the front who we think can win the race. Because again, three times there have been only one driver. This past July, there were none. So to me, that says skew towards one driver. But again, we can also have two drivers in the top 10 if we think that those guys are going to either win or finish second and potentially get some laps led. There is some viability to drivers who start towards the front. The reason for that is that finishing points are huge. So if a driver wins a race, they're probably going to score well no matter where they started. Like, if William Byron wins the race in the pole, he's going to score well, even though he's not going to get you any place differential points. So I think for every lineup you can construct in a tournament, you want to figure out who you think is going to win the race. And this is why tournaments are so fun, is because you can play this assumption game. If you plug in Joey Logano, who is starting fourth in this race, basically what you're saying is, I think Joey Logano is going to win this race. When I make that assumption, who else could do well if Logano wins the race? And honestly, if Logano wins the race in fourth spot, you're probably not going to get a lot of other guys in the top 10 who score super well. So I would get Logano and then plunge further back. I think that, you know, the way that I'm defining this is my anchor. You know, your anchor is the guy you think will win this race. You plug them in first and build from there. For cash games, I am not sold on having an anchor because I think that there is so much cushion to using drivers in the back. There are a lot of good drivers available at the back for this specific race. So I don't think an anchor is necessary in a cash game. But for tournaments, I want an anchor who is going to win the race. Now, it's very possible that my anchor doesn't start in the top 10. And if that does happen, I'm just going to fade the top 10 entirely. And that's kind of what we saw in the July race. So basically, I think what you're doing is determining who you think will win the race and building your lineup around that assumption for your tournament roster. Sometimes that will lead you to having no drivers in the top 10. Sometimes it will lead you to two. Like if they have a teammate starting in the top 10. Like if you think that Clint Bowyer wins the Daytona 500, maybe you stack him with Kevin Harvick, or maybe you stack him with Eric Almirola, his two teammates, and you think that Stewart Haas Racing does wind up dominating this race, I think that at that point, it would be okay to use two in the top 10, but I'd mix things up based on the assumption of who wins the race. But more often than not, again, you are going to want to use drivers starting further towards the back because their floor is higher and their ceiling is also very, very good. So overall, pick your anchor, drop back. A couple other bullet points here to keep in mind while you're filling out your rosters. I think because Daytona is such a high variance track where it's kind of hard to predict who is going to score well, you do want to have lower exposure levels to drivers than you would have for most other races. Like in Fontana, I'm okay going pretty hard at a guy. But I think for this race specifically, I want to have lower exposure levels, and I want my exposure level to be directly correlated to where they're starting. So Kyle Busch, starting 31st for this race, I am very okay having higher exposure to him because his floor is higher than the other guys. But Joey Logano starting third, I'm going to have much lower exposure to him because the range of outcomes in which he scores really well is much lower than the range of outcomes for Kyle Busch. And I want to acknowledge that and have lower exposure levels. It also safeguards me if Kyle Busch is caught up in a wreck. Even though I love him for this race, you know, it does safeguard me because that could still happen and he could still score poorly even though he's starting towards the back. Other thing you got to do is be willing to punt, because even if it does leave salary on the table, because there will be drivers who have super low salaries who will score well this week. There is a driver who is minimum price who I like quite a bit. And if I use him, I'm probably going to wind up leaving salary on the table because I don't want to use a whole lot of guys who are super expensive for this week. So leave salary on the table for almost every lineup. That's going to differentiate you from the field. Be willing to punt. Use drivers who are super cheap. We'll go through specifically two drivers who I like a lot who are super cheap. And I think that if you do that, you will be able to differentiate a bit from where the field is at. The final thing is you should stack teams occasionally, because what we've seen at Daytona the past couple of years is that teammates work really well together. And what can happen then is they can jump out front, dominate the race, and control the top couple of spots in the finishing order. Specifically last year at Talladega, it's a different track, very different track, but it's a similar format with the restrictor plates. The Stewart Haas racing cars were just dominant. Eric Almirola won that race. Clint Bowyer was awesome there. Kurt Busch and Kevin Harvick ran well before falling off. So you want to build around team stacks. And I don't do this very often, but I think that it does make sense here. And I think that's again, the scenario in which I could see using multiple drivers in the top 10. You've got Joey Logano and Paul Menard, both guys who have cars that are powered by Penske Racing. They're starting the top 10. Kevin Harvick, Clint Bowyer, Eric Almirola, they're all in the top 10. And they're all Stewart Haas Racing cars. You've got Martin Truex Jr. and Denny Hamlin, both of Joe Gibbs Racing, starting towards the front. You can do it towards the back, too. I think that that makes absolute sense, but I really do think that team stacks in general are good ways to go under the assumption that a specific team winds up dominating the race. So team stacks, totally in play for this week. I'm not going to do it for every lineup, but for a lot of them, I will assume that Joe Gibbs Racing goes off, or I'll assume that Stuart Haas Racing goes off, or Penske goes off, and then build my lineup based around that assumption. Speaking of Penske Racing, let's take a look at our tier-by-tier breakdown for the Daytona 500, letting you know which drivers I think are cash game viable and which ones I just like in general from each tier. Starting off with the elites on FanDuel, that starts with Joey Logano, who is $12,500. His teammate Brad Keselowski, who is 12-2. Kevin Harvick, also a Ford but different team, at $11,500. And then Denny Hamlin, who is $11,200. And when you look at this tier, most of these guys performed really well in their dual races, which means they will start higher in the field. Logano and Harvick won theirs. Hamlin starts 10th. That tells you that Daytona is not totally random, because the most skilled drivers did wind up winning. But we do get a big exception here with Brad Keselowski. He starts all the way back in 35th. He had a pit road violation during his dual race and then messed up paying the tone, for his violation. So just a bad race for Keselowski, but that means he is a major value at starting in 35th. So I think if you're filling out a cash game roster, you lock in Keselowski and build from there. I think we should be aggressive with him in tournaments too, so I love Keselowski. And if you look at his record at Daytona, he has finished outside the top 10 in 8 of his past 9 Daytona races. So, you know, maybe a concern, but the other race was a win. At the end of the day, he is a good driver with elite equipment who is starting in our ideal spot back in 35th. So don't overthink it. You're not going 100% on him in tournaments because, again, weird stuff happens to Daytona and he could very easily wreck. But this is the guy with the most upside of any driver in the race, and also he also has the highest floor. So Keselowski, a tremendous play, my favorite play of the slate. With the other drivers in this tier, I think you have to decide who is the best pick for a dominator, because they're all starting up front and they would have to be your anchor. You got Kevin Harvick and Logano. They have sister cars towards the front, as mentioned, with Logano having Paul Menard. Harvick has Bowyer and Almirola, and that could lead to another race where Stuart Haas Racing just dominates. Hamlin does have Martin Truex Jr. starting right beside him, which is certainly advantageous. One thing here that could play a kind of role, a kind of key role, is that Logano will start on the outside lane, which has been huge during speed weeks. Hamlin is there too, but he's further back, whereas Harvick is on the inside. So I think that what this does is it could allow Logano to be that guy who pulls the train around the track early in the race and gets those laps lead points. That's pretty big. With Denny Hamlin, he will be aggressive, as he showed during his dual race. He's not going to sit around. I love that. He's going to try to lead laps. I just don't think his equipment is as good as that of Logano and Harvick. So I think when I toss this all together, all things considered, I do favor Logano and Harvick just because their equipment is better. I would go Logano first, followed by Harvick, Hamlin third, among the guys in this tier. But again, Keselowski is the lock, and then it's everybody else if you're spending this much salary. Our second tier on FanDuel is Chase Elliott at $11,000 through Kurt Busch at $10,000. And none of these guys are starting right at the front. So this is a really good tier for DFS. But the big obvious play is Kyle Busch, who is starting back in 31st, a couple rows in front of Keselowski. He has finished in the top 5 at Daytona 7 times. He was 2nd and 3rd in the 2 races in 2016. So, like Keselowski, Busch knows how to get around Daytona. The results recently have not been great, but it's the same discussion as we had with Keselowski, where he is a talented driver with decent equipment who is starting in the ideal spot. In last year's July Daytona race, it was a Joe Gibbs Racing car who won and Erik Jones, and a Joe Gibbs funded car with Martin Truex Jr. who finished 2nd. They can compete here. So I would favor Keselowski because Fords have been so dominant here and because Keselowski is starting further back, but I'm going to have a ton of both Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski for this race just because they're starting so far back, got good equipment, talented drivers. So those are your top two plays among the higher salaried drivers. After that, in the second tier, kind of have to decide between Elliott, Blaney, and Kurt Busch, and they're all starting between 12th and 18th, so you're not getting a major edge there. I think, for me personally, Elliott and Blaney are a tier ahead of Busch, largely from an equipment perspective. Elliott, though, has never finished better than 14th at Daytona, but his betting odds are super short. You know, earlier this week, he was 11-1 on FanDuel Sportsbook. And I think it makes sense because the Hendrick cars have all looked crazy fast all of speed weeks. It didn't show during last night's dual races, but it kind of makes sense. Alex Bowman and William Byron were both locked into their spots and eventually dropped back from the pack to ensure their cars didn't get wrecked, and they could continue to start up there once the race began. Elliott looked aggressive, had some speed when he was running by himself. Johnson, kind of a similar thing. So I think these Hendrick cars are better than they showed Thursday night, and I think that that's why I rank Elliott highest in this tier. So, slightly ahead of Blaney because Elliott is starting further back. With Blaney, though, he has great equipment. He's in the same cars as Logano and Keselowski, and what I love about Ryan Blaney is the dude's crazy. He wants to run up front. He's very young, and that shows. Again, he led 118 laps in last year's Daytona 500 and finished 7th in that one. He was also 2nd in the 500 in 2017. Ryan Blaney is a really good, really aggressive driver, which is conducive to good things for DFS. So I think he's a really fun anchor starting in 14th. And I'm also not opposed to stacking him with Keselowski and Logano. It's very expensive, but as mentioned, there is a minimum price driver who I like. It gives you a good blend of both place differential points and finishing point upside. And we know Penske can dominate at this track. So I think if I'm ranking this tier, I go Kyle Busch first by a mile, then Chase Elliott second, Ryan Blaney third, followed by Kurt Busch. Busch is a really good restrictor play driver, but I question the equipment a bit more with him than I do with the other. So Kyle Busch, Chase Elliott, Ryan Blaney, Kurt Busch for me in this tier. Moving now to the middle tier, this is a Ricky Stenhouse Jr. at $9,800 through Jimmy Johnson at $8,200. Stenhouse, a guy who could dominate. We'll talk more about that later on, but I think that really the allure here is some of the lower tier drivers, because a lot of these guys in this tier are starting up front. You got Stenhouse, Alex Bowman, Eric Almirola, and Clint Bowyer all starting in the top 10. Martin Truex Jr. is 11th, so at the top end, a lot of these guys are more so for tournaments than cash games, but there is some value a bit lower on the scale here. Specifically, Eric Jones, starting 28th, he is $8,800, and as mentioned, he is the most recent winner at Daytona, as he won here back in July. In the dual race, the reason he's starting so low is because he got a pit penalty during his duel. That's why he's starting poorly. He did lead 11 laps in last year's 500 before he crashed, finished 9th the race before that, so I think that if you're looking for value in this tier, or for good, you know, like safety in this tier, Eric Jones is your best bet. I would stack him with Kyle Busch, because if you want a Joe Gibbs Racing stack, that makes a lot of sense. So Eric Jones, my favorite driver in this tier, I think pretty easily. You got Kyle Larson starting 26th. He is $8,300, and he hasn't been great historically at restricted plates. As mentioned, Kurt Busch's equipment not great. He's a teammate of Larson. We saw Jamie McMurray in a similar car struggle to have speed last night. So Larson only 2 top 10s in 10 career races at Daytona. So if I had to pick, I'd favor Jones over Larson pretty heavily. But Larson is a good process play based on where he's starting. And I think that Jimmy Johnson in the class showed that we can't let track history overpower, you know, a good starting spot. So to me, Larson is still a good play, even though he is he's not done overly well here, but I think that I would prefer Eric Jones. Austin Dillon starting 20th. He is crazy consistent at Daytona. He won last year's 500. He has 7 top 10s and 11 career Daytona races, so I'd rank him ahead of Larson, even though Dillon is starting a bit higher in the order, which means less place differential upside, but he's very good here. We know he can win it, so Dillon ahead of Larson for me. Jimmy Johnson a little bit higher. He is 17th. It's kind of a similar line of thinking to Chase Elliott, where they're fast cars that could get some place differential points. And again, Johnson, his record at Daytona is putrid, but he did win the Clash last Sunday, so you know he has upside. These Hendrick cars have some speed, starting a little bit further back because he didn't really have a teammate for the latter part of the duel, so I think that Johnson is a pretty attractive play, and I think that only for tournaments, mind you, because he is starting a little bit further toward the front, but I guess he's in play for cash games. I guess I would say that, but there are other better options here, specifically Jones, for cash. If I'm ranking these four drivers starting a little bit further back in this tier, I would go Jones first. I would go Jimmy Johnson for the Hendrick speed, then Austin Dillon, and then Kyle Larson. But I think all those four are very much in play for Sunday, and I will have exposure to all of them. As for the top group, the guys starting towards the front, I mentioned that Stenhouse is up there. He is always a threat to lead laps. He's kind of crazy. Like his nickname is Wrecky Stenhouse. He was involved in three crashes here back in July. So the dude's aggressive, and that's good. So I wouldn't mind getting exposure to him. But I think my favorite pick to dominate is Eric Almirola. He's starting eighth, and he's got that Stewart Haas speed. But starting in eighth allows him to get a little bit of place differential juice, tiny bit, you know, tiny bit. But I think that Clint Bowyer is the same argument as Eric Almirola, but Bowyer is two starting spots ahead of Almirola. I think that Almirola's talent is what wins me over. And I know that Bowyer almost won last night in his duel, but Eric Almirola is a very good driver on restrictor plates. He won in Talladega last year, former Daytona winner. So Eric Almirola, my favorite pick to dominate in this pricing tier. And I think that Martin Truex Jr. is also in play there, but Almirola is my favorite. Moving down to the value plays, that is Bubba Wallace at $7,900 through David Ragan at $6,000. In this tier, got a couple of guys who qualified well. Bubba made up a bunch of spots on the final lap last night and finished sixth in his duel, which is great because he's fun to watch, but means he starts higher. You got Paul Menard starting high too, William Byron, they all qualified well. I would still consider Bubba, but all the guys in that tier starting at the front are super risky, and I think they'd have to be low-exposure tournament darts in order to be super viable. Daniel Hemric, though, is pretty different. He is starting 29th, and I'm interested in that guy for sure. This is his first full-time season racing in the Cup Series. He's with Richard Childress Racing. He is taking Ryan Newman's old seat, which means he is teammates with Austin Dillon, again, who won this race last year. Hemric, if you look back to his Xfinity Series record, was not great on restrictor plates, but did finish 8th in Daytona in last year's July Xfinity race, so that's good, and we know he has the equipment to win after Dillon did so last year. Talent evaluators in NASCAR view him as a top-end prospect. I believe Bob Pockrass had him as his number two prospect in the sport, and he is number one among those who will be full-time drivers in the Cup Series for this year. So Hemric has talent. He is my favorite value driver in this, or favorite driver in this tier for this race, once you put qualifying into consideration. I also do dig Daniel Suarez. He is starting in 23rd. He comes over to Stewart Haas Racing this year. He was with Joe Gibbs Racing last year, and I think that's an equipment upgrade for him on restrictor plate races. And he's starting 23rd, so he can get some place differential upside. I don't think people will go to Suarez because, like Chase Elliott, his record at Daytona is not great. His best finish so far is 17th, but he did look pretty racy in the clash last week, so I think Suarez could surprise people. He's starting, again, back in 23rd. He has a super low salary at $7,300, gets you access to great equipment for a low salary and potential for place differential, so Daniel Suarez, I think, is a guy I will like a lot more than other people do. The other guy starting in the back here in this tier is Michael McDowell, back in 34th. McDowell, not a name we talk about a lot, but he does have three career top 10 finishes in the past, or three top 10 finishes in the past five Daytona races. His team has shown speed here in the past. They don't show speed anywhere else, but they can get around here pretty well. There is some risk that he could lose the draft because he does not have the same equipment as Busch and Keselowski, but I still think he's a really good play. He's just $6,200. He fits in naturally if you want to go all in on the back and need to save some salary in order to fit in both Busch and Keselowski. So I think McDowell is a cash game consideration for me at $6,200. Let's close up here with the punt plays at $5,800 on down. That is Matt Tift and lower. And two guys that were interesting here. One is Tift, who we'll talk about in a second. But the big one for me is Tyler Reddick. He is minimum salary at $4,000 and starting 39th. And the risk with using drivers who are starting that low or who have this low of a salary usually is that they could lose the draft. You know, if they're not good enough to keep up, they're going to lose the draft, and that's going to bite your rosters quite a bit. But Tift actually showed really good speed in single car qualifying last Sunday. He is a teammate to Daniel Hemric and Austin Dillon, so you know the equipment is actually pretty good. And Tyler Reddick won last year's Xfinity race in Daytona. There is some risk here because he's super inexperienced. He is running in the third car for the team and is not running full time. So they're going to give their best equipment to Hemric and to Dillon. But I think that Reddick stuff is good enough, and I'm willing to leave a lot of salary on the table to use him at $4,000. I think he's a good play. I would teeter on using him in cash games. I don't think you'll need to for this week, but I think if you wanted to, you could. I would probably just prefer to use McDowell at 62 if you really want to dive this low on the salary tier for cash games. The other guy who intrigues me down here is, as mentioned, Matt Tift. He is a teammate to McDowell and David Ragan. And again, the team has had success on restrictor plates. Tift is starting 33rd. I'm not entirely sold on the talent here because he is super young. He was just okay in the Xfinity series, so I would prefer Reddick over Tift straight up. But I could see Tift having a good day. Reddick's equipment is better than Tift's, and I think that's why I prefer Reddick straight up. He's also starting a bit lower, which helps too. So Reddick over Tift, but I think both those guys are very much in play once you get below $6,000. And again, leaving salary on the table recommended for this slate. That is all we have as far as the tier-by-tier driver breakdown goes, but as we do with the PGA podcast, want to give picks to win here. And the way that we break this down is I'll give one pick to win above $10,000 and then a longer shot, a driver who I think has a good shot to win but has a salary below $10,000. Above $10,000, I don't want to go with the chalk and Joey Logano or Kevin Harvick. I'm going to go Ryan Blaney. I'm sticking with the Fords because the Fords have been so good here over the past couple of years, but Ryan Blaney ran out front last year. We know he has talent. He's got speed. He's got the attitude you want for a restrictor plate. So Ryan Blaney, my pick to win the 2019 Daytona 500. My other pick, I kind of think that Jimmy Johnson could surprise because Hendrick has shown a lot of speed during speed weeks. They have single car speed, and he could link up with Chase Elliott, get to the front, find William Byron and Alex Bowman. I think that Jimmy Johnson could surprise people. I thought about picking him. I did not wind up picking him, though, because the Fords have been so good. So my actual pick outside of Ryan Blaney will still be a Ford. It's Daniel Suarez. He is $7,300, I believe. Let me see here. Yes, $7,000 for Daniel Suarez. So very low salary, but he has Stewart Haas Racing equipment, which means he can get up there with Almirola, Bowyer, Harvick, and he can compete. And we know he'll be fast. Suarez has not done well at Daytona historically, but that does not mean he will not do well this week. So my two picks to win for this weekend, Ryan Blaney, Daniel Suarez, riding with the Fords because they've looked so good, and I think that's the way to go. But if I had to deviate from the Fords, Jimmy Johnson, more interesting than you may think he is based on the way things have gone for him historically recently at Daytona. That is all we have for today's podcast. As always, a bit of a different format, or as mentioned, a bit of a different format than we usually have just because qualifying was earlier in the week. Usually, this will go up on Wednesday. To make sure you get that, along with our PGA podcast, you can subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed, Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Ratings, reviews, and subscriptions always are appreciated. If you have any questions for me, you can find me on Twitter at Jim Sonnes, J-I-M-S-A-N-N-E-S. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, P-O-D-S as in podcast. We also have NASCAR content up on Number Fire via myself and Evan Chaney doing the primer, which will be up later today on Friday. So check all that out on numberfire.com. Have fun filling out lineups for this weekend. The Daytona 500, always a super fun race to watch. Hopefully a bit more exciting than what we've seen so far in speed weeks, but I've got some faith. Got faith in the drivers that they'll give us a good show on Sunday. Look forward to talking with you again next week. Good luck in the 500, and we'll see you again soon. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.